Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and tonight's conversation is with Jim Fleisig, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Information Systems and the Chief Information Officer of the U.S. Department of Treasury. And joining me is Susan Graham, also a PwC partner. Well, Jim, before we leave that last segment, I wanted to ask you, based on your understanding of the private sector, what are some of the differences between public sector CIOs and their private sector counterparts?
I've had a number of opportunities to participate with private sector CIOs on a number of interesting forums and have this exact discussion. And we quickly find out that the issues that we're dealing with are quite similar, the key technology issues. What is different, though, is some of the unique statutory and regulatory requirements that are imposed on the federal government. We have the Clinger-Cohen legislation, which lays out specifically responsibilities for a federal CIO. And since we are the federal government, of course, we are responsible not just to our agency, but the integrity of all of our actions are responsible to the U.S. citizens. So we need to recognize we have some unique responsibilities and unique needs. For example, in the areas of complying with government-wide policies, reducing paperwork burdens on the public, as well as sound records management programs. We need to preserve historical archiving, disseminate government information. Some other areas that I find with my counterparts in the private sector, their ability to respond quickly to changing technology needs. As you're aware, the internet has really changed the paradigm of the whole information technology land front. And so consequently, things change so rapidly that CIOs in the private sector can respond to that change. They can talk to the CEOs, they can change their investment decisions, change the direction they're going. In the government, it's much more difficult because we work through various layers of government, the budget process oftentimes. For example, right now, we're working on our year 2002 information technology budgets, and we like to think that we're the CIOs, that we are smart on the technology, but if you go back just 2 years, and try to predict what we have today, you would find that the portals we have and the web-based services that are out there today and the things we're doing were largely not seen 2 years ago. So now we're trying to look 2 to 5 years out in the future and do our budget process and work. So I think it takes us longer in government to respond to changing technology needs because of the way the budget process works and our lead time. And we need to work on that. We need to find ways that the government can live in so-called internet time. We also have this difficulty I talked about before of funding interagency and intergovernmental IT projects. The appropriations process is set up to allocate dollars to individual agencies. Yet what we want to do is intergovernmental projects. Look at the government from the point of view of the customer. If you think, and I use entitlements all the time, we have agencies here. We've got entitlement programs for Social Security, SSI, Women, Infant, and Children, food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid. The list goes on and on and on. Yet the programs are administered by separate agencies. In my mind, if you picture kind of an electronic spider web of government, we ought to have all of those agencies doing entitlements working together with one common smart card access, if you will. And that's been difficult for the federal government because of our difficulty of funding these kinds of projects because the dollars are not allocated in such a way to do that. And of course, we already talked about the difficulty we have with compensating IT professionals and competing with the private sector. So the federal CIO needs to come up with creative ways to get the job done, recognizing that we have a difficult time competing from a monetary perspective with the private sector.
Jim, thanks. You have an interesting perspective since you wear two hats in your government role as vice chair of the CIO Council and then as Treasury CIO. From both of these perspectives, what do you see as the top technology issues that the federal government at large and the Department of Treasury in particular are facing as we move into the first decade of the 21st century?
Not to be redundant with things we already said, but keeping pace with the evolving technology, the skilled IT, security and privacy, adequate funding, and ensuring that CIO is a key decision maker are true challenges. The culture challenges are also something we need to change the culture of government. Looking out into the future, it's going to be a totally different world we're going to be living in. as we move forward with e-government. We're going to be looking at the whole financial and banking industry changing, smart card technology, public key infrastructure, digital signatures, biometrics are going to change the world we live in dramatically. And we need to think of how we do that in government. We don't want the citizen walking around with 35 smart cards, one for every government program. We want integrated programs, integrated. So it's going to drive the government to change the way it operates, the way it's structured. In Treasury, for example, just a few examples, the U.S. Mint and their coin sales, it's a remarkable story of how one of our bureaus, just by going to internet-based products, has changed the whole concept of their coin sales and numismatic coin sales. Same thing with savings bonds. Next time you buy a savings bond, buy one on the internet and compare that to the way you used to do it when you'd go out to the bank to do that kind of thing. And I can go on and on. I've got dozens and dozens and dozens of examples that are going to fundamentally change the way the government works. Then throw into that wireless internet and new advances in biotechnologies and genetic research and so forth. And I think you're looking at a whole different world. I think some of the applications of the future, things that are going on right now with real-time pricing models and things that'll happen are going to be absolutely phenomenal. I think we've barely scratched the surface of some of the exciting things we're going to see in the future.
Well, it's often said that to understand the future, you got to sort of understand the past as well. And I'd like to take you back a little bit to your time as team leader on Vice President Gore's National Performance Review, where you led the information technology team. Can you tell us about the results that came from that and how they were implemented?
We had a lot of very, very positive results from that, Paul. You know, and really it was a very simple concept. What we did in heading up, when I headed up the vice president's team, is we just looked at government from the point of view of the customer. And all of the programs we defined from the point of view of how would a customer better work with the government. And out of that grew a number of things. You know, it grew the Access America for Seniors program, where a senior can log on and they don't need to know which agency does what. They don't need to know what comes from Social Security, what comes from labor, you can sign on now to the Access America site. You can find out everything you need to know as a senior citizen in the country, what the federal government offerings, state government, local offerings. And the same thing then held true for Access America for Students. And then the same thing with grants programs, the same thing with law enforcement programs. Again, what we're doing is we're looking at the government from a functional perspective. In my mind, it's the so-called virtual agencies of government of the future, where you'll have the Department of Entitlements and you'll have the law enforcement virtual agencies, where we are coordinating things that need to be done on a functional basis. I don't think it necessarily means in the short run a complete reorganization of government, but what it does mean is using the power of the infrastructure to get those portions of government that need to work together working together more efficiently. I think in the long run it will lead to probably a smaller government, a more streamlined government, and probably some realignment of government as customers begin to demand improved services.
You'd mentioned, Jim, the importance of cultural change in moving forward in the future. And I think the alignment of culture change and technology is an interesting area. What kind of cultural change do you think needs to happen in government, and how do you as an executive in the organization look to move that culture change forward?
Culture change is very difficult. You know, I can change someone's job overnight, but having their attitude and so is a much more difficult issue, and it's something that takes time. We have cultures in the U.S. government where people are used to doing things the way we've always done things. And we've, in order to get into the world of e-government, we're going to have to change those cultures. We're going to have to give up certain things and move to new directions of doing things.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you very much, Jim, for spending so much time with us. Susan and I have enjoyed this conversation very much.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, Conversations with Government Leaders. To learn more about the PricewaterhouseCoopers Endowment for the Business of Government, visit us on the web at endowment.pwcglobal.com. See you next week.